You know, I always like to take this opportunity to talk about myself.
Woo!
Looking man, the best dressed man. You know why? Woo, because my name's Ric Flair.
Woo!
Hello and welcome to the only six-star wrestling radio show on planet Earth. This is World Class Radio. I'm your co-host, Jordan the Body Fox, and with me today is my newest guest host, the man with the plan, Mr. Christopher Platt. Christopher, what's up, brother?
Greetings and salutations, ladies and gentlemen. Do not adjust your radios, ladies and gentlemen. That's right. The main event, the MVP, Mr. Velvet Pipes himself, is on your airwaves. Brother, I am doing fantastic and getting better. How about yourself?
I'm doing great. I have to say, that might have been the coolest intro I have ever heard in my life, dude. did you just use Velvet Pipes?
Oh, yes, Mr. Velvet Pipes.
Oh, my God, that is amazing. Oh, that is the coolest nickname ever.
I wish I could take credit for it, but I can't, man. Just a real quick tangent. So I was in college, and I had this job for probably about a week and a half at this telemarketing place. And the guy sitting next to me, he heard me talking, and, you know, older white guy. And he just said, oh, man, smooth, man. You got the Velvet Pipes. And I thought it was cool, too, so I just rolled with it.
Oh, that's so awesome. Velvet Pipes. I love it. I absolutely love it, man. Well, hey, so to everyone out there listening this morning, what the deal is our main man, Mr. Ray Hustle, Mr. Ray Cash, he had a family obligation today. Ray's got a young daughter that's got a school function today, so he had to take off this morning. So I reached out to the chairshot.com family, and Mr. Christopher Platt hit us back up and said, yeah, man, I will definitely come on the show. So Mr. Velvet Pipes is here with us today. So, Christopher, tell me a little bit about yourself, my man.
Well, first and foremost, I'm originally from Cleveland, Ohio, which, yes, it's the Cavs, yay, and the Indians, but, you know, there's some other teams, not so much. Was out in Arizona for a little bit, man. I came out here to Atlanta about a year ago. My lady and I, we decided to get serious and kind of build a life together, and we wanted to be back east because this is where most of our family and friends are. You can pretty much say I'm a lifelong wrestling fan. I think I've been a fan for at least 30 years, and I go way back. And I got so enthralled in it, man, that not only did I watch everything that I could possibly get my hands on at the time, but I went back and caught up on all the history that I missed. So I went back and saw, you know, all the Starcades and all the WrestleManias and this and that. And I kind of have a unique perspective because I was born in Cleveland. Then I moved to Virginia when I was 9, and then we went back to Cleveland when I was 16. But that's neither here nor there. But the time I was in Virginia, there was this channel. There was this public access channel. So, you know, PBS, but it wasn't PBS.
Mm-hmm.
And every day, Monday through Friday, Monday it was USWA, Tuesday it was WCW, Wednesday it was AWA. Thursday, it was WWE or WWF at the time, and then Friday, they show GLOW, the Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling. So I literally got to see everybody. I saw everybody. I go way back out to USWA, a young gentleman named Steve Williams when he was hooking up with a gentleman, Chris Adams, and Lady Blossom. And then, you know what I mean? Fast forward to, you know, the biggest star in the history of the industry. So, yeah, I got to see a little bit of everything and everybody, and I love professional wrestling, man. I put it up there with jazz and hip-hop as the greatest American art forms that have ever existed.
That is absolutely awesome, man. That is absolutely awesome. That is really cool. 5 days a week you had wrestling, man. You do realize how jealous my probably 9-year-old to 14-year-old self is right now that you had wrestling 5 days a week. The only way I had wrestling 5 days a week was because I recorded Raw and Nitro, You know what I mean? In two separate rooms, in my living room and in my bedroom. I recorded one and then recorded the other, and then I watched them all throughout the week, man.
You know what? I got my sister. She got pissed at me a couple of times because I taped over a couple of her Different World episodes to watch Superstars. Like, it wasn't even something cool as Nitro. It was like One Man Gang versus Big Boss Man in the main event. You know what I mean? So,
Oh, man.
I was a Zelazky kid, man. So TV was pretty much my third parent.
Right. What was... On a Different World, it was Cosby's oldest kid, right? And she went off to college. I used to have a huge... what was her name?
Yes, Denise, Lisa Bonet.
Yeah, Lisa Bonet. She left after the first season, but, man, I used to have a huge crush on her when I was growing up, man.
We all did.
Yeah. We all did, didn't we?
It was her and Winnie Cooper from the Wonder Years. Those were my Topanga. Those were my three.
Oh, yeah, Topanga. Well, tell me what you do for thechairshot.com, man. I know you're on a couple of different shows on the website, so tell me a little bit about those.
Yes, sir. So I'm one of the featured personalities on the Chairshot website, chairshot.com. I do Pod is War with Andrew Belaz. That's every Thursday. You can find that on Chairshot Radio Network. We go back and forth about the top five biggest topics that week in professional wrestling. So think about it as it's First Take meets PTI, with the debauchery ramped up to about 15. So it's a really cool listen, and I suggest you guys check it out. And I also am on the flagship show of Chairshot Radio Network, which is Chairshot. And I'm on there with the commissioner of Chairshot, PC Tunney, as well as the architect, DPP. And we go back and forth. We kind of recap Raw and SmackDown and whatever WWE has going on, the pay-per-views or whatever the news is. And we also have interviews with some of the premier indie performers in the industry. So it's a really cool show. Both of them are cool. You guys should check it out. And you should check out all the great content on Chairshot. I also occasionally write something as well. My latest two articles were just recaps of MLW Radio, but you should check those out as well. But you should just be going to the Chairshot anyway. Like, I'm not just blowing smoke here just because I'm affiliated. The Chairshot.com really is the premier place for all things professional wrestling. News, reviews, analysis, they get it out there quick like that. We've got a crackpot stab. As soon as news breaks, we're on top of it. And like an anvil on a seesaw, there's great articles, great writers associated. There's great content, not just my shows. You've got Mike Knox. You've got Outside Interference. You've got 2MB, which I think that's still the name because they have a lady on there now. You've got Attitude of Aggression. And that's just a few names, man, with thechairshot.com. So, yeah, make sure you guys check it out. If you're not, you're slipping, give us a whirl. Also, be part of the movement. Make sure you guys go to prowrestlingtees.com/thechairshot and pick up your official Chairshot t-shirts. We got them in all shapes, all sizes, all colors. We got them for men, women. I believe we even got them from children. And fellas, come on. Come be part of the cool kids, all right? And let me tell you guys something. Fellas, there is nothing sexier than seeing your significant other in an Always Use Your Head t-shirt. Trust and believe.
Oh, my God. My man, you just did my entire shtick. I love you. I love you. You just knocked out everything that I try to say, and plus about three times more, and you did it in about a third of the time that it usually takes me. I'm usually fumbling over my words about halfway through, and a squirrel out my window catches my eye, and you just knocked it out, bro. You're professional. You are professional. Mr. Velvet Pipes, my man.
Only you gotta live up to the name, brother.
Right. last thing I want to give a shout out to is don't forget to follow Mr. Christopher Platt on Twitter at TheRealCPlatt. That's TheRealCPlatt. So give him a follow. Go check out his shows. Go check out the Chair Shot. And if you're ready to go, my man, let's review some SmackDown. So we start off the day with a little Miz TV. He gets a couple of chants going. some shameless self-promoting with his new TV show that he's got coming out. And then he brings out the New Day. And the whole point of bringing out the New Day was to try to get them to finally announce who is going to be the one member that is in the Money in the Bank ladder match. Do you have any predictions on who do you think from the New Day is going to be in the ladder match?
I think it has to be Big E. I mean, I've been clamoring for it for years now, and I'm not the only one. There's a lot of Big E truthers kind of. There's a Big E contingency bubbling within the IWC. We feel like he's the guy that has the most main event potential. I see him as Don King and Mike Tyson rolled into one, if that makes any sense. So I think that's where they have to go, but their plan is absolutely cool. Like, they're playing this perfectly, because if this was a legitimate athletic competition, why would you give up that psychological edge that you have on your other opponents?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because if I am one of the seven other participants in the ladder match, I don't know if someone with speed like Kofi Kingston brings to the table, or some cunningness that Xavier Woods brings to the table, or just raw aggression and power like Big E is coming into the match. So you literally, if this was a work, you would not, I mean, excuse me, if this was a shoot, you would not know what to expect. So yeah, I think this is absolutely awesome. I mean, they have, just like you said, they have a psychological edge on the entire situation right now. I absolutely love it. And we're getting some awesome buildup, like, 12 minutes on Miz TV, where they just, you know, got to do the who. So everything was really cool. Miz is my favorite worker in the WWE right now, bar none. About the time, beginning of this year, when Rolling Stone officially announced him as the 2017 Wrestler of the Year, and which WWE quickly dubbed the Superstar of the Year, is when I really, really started to realize that The Miz's in-ring work has started to come up in status like his character has in the last 2 years. What's your thoughts about The Miz, and have you always felt the way that you feel about The Miz, if that makes sense? Or has your feelings toward The Miz changed in the last, say, 3 years?
When he first came in, you could see the potential. It was there. He was kind of this smarmy guy that you just kind of wanted to punch in the face. And I understand why they kept giving him chance after chance after chance, because I know a lot of people on the IWC were kind of complaining, like, well, why do they keep pushing this guy? But now you see why, because they saw the potential in him, and right now he's clicking on all cylinders. And it's cool to see a guy in any sport, or any walk of life for that matter, put it all together and just fire on all cylinders. And it's been, his metamorphosis has been incredible to watch, and he's one of my favorite performers as well, week in and week out.
Absolutely, man, absolutely. I'm kind of embarrassed to say this, but I really took notice of him and the metamorphosis, as you said, that he's taken in the last couple of years. When Daniel Bryan was the general manager of SmackDown, and The Miz cut that promo on him on Talking Smack. I'm pretty sure you probably remember that, because I mean, it was all over the place. But when he cut that promo, it was like something clicked in my head, where it just all of a sudden I'm like, who the hell is this Miz guy that I've been watching for a decade now, and how did he all of a sudden become the man? You know what I mean?
Well, that was his Neo moment. If you recall in the first Matrix, you know, they kill Neo, and then, you know, the woman brings him back because she whispers, hey, I love you. And then he finally realizes, oh, man, shit, I am that dude. And you know what I mean? That was the Miz's moment. That program, or excuse me, that Talking Smack interview right there. And it's been setting up a feud for the last, 2 years, that I don't know when they're going to pay it off. Do you think we get it at SummerSlam, or do they hold off till Mania to give us the Miz Daniel Bryan program?
Man, I truly hope that they hold off till Mania. I just feel like with 2 years of build, I mean, you have to do that at the biggest show of them all. And I mean, the only way that you, in my opinion, we're going to say hypothetically, I'm booking WWE from here on out. The only way I don't hold off that feud until WrestleMania is if you plan on putting one of the belts on Daniel Bryan. If you are going to put the WWE title on him, or if you're going to have him jump to Raw and put the Universal title on him. If you're not going to do that, then I think you really build it up. You make it as if it's as close to 50-50 as you possibly can, where, you know, The Miz looks like he's got a legitimate shot of going over in the match, and you do it at WrestleMania. What's your thoughts on it?
I love that line Miz had last night, where he was talking about, yeah, everything that you've been waiting for and what you finally been wanting to see is happening July 29th. My reality show. That's just great. That's awesome. That's awesome.
Oh, yes.
I would like them to hold off until Mania. I just don't have faith that they can tell a coherent and cohesive and entertaining and captivating storyline for that long. Just, you know, recent history considered.
Yeah, you make a pretty valid point. I feel like the reason it's worked these last 2 years is because they haven't put the machine behind this feud, because I assume they thought this entire time that Daniel Bryan wasn't ever going to wrestle again. So they just kind of had this play feud in the background, on the back burner. And I think if they make it a central point in the show, they will somehow figure out a way to fuck it up, just to be blunt. You know what I mean?
Oh shit! I didn't know we can cuss on this.
Yeah. Do what you do, man. I'm sorry. I should have probably prefaced that before we even started the show. Yeah, you do what you do, man. You do what you do.
Fuck shit, damn motherfucker. Ooh, that felt good. Hey, all right.
All right. Oh man. All right. So after the New Day promo on Miz TV, Miz gets chased out. He takes off to the back, and he's met at Gorilla by Paige, who says, "Hey, you just said that you could beat the New Day any place, any time. So go out there and prove it." So they get a match between him and Big E started at the beginning. Xavier Woods is on commentary, and about midway through the match, they treat Big E, which is funny because you referenced him like as if he's Mike Tyson and Don King rolled into one, because they treat Big E as if he is a boxer. They set him down on a little stool, they bring him over there, they wash his mouth out. I think that was it syrup that they washed his mouth out with?
Yes, it was syrup, don't remind me. I'm so sick of the pancake and all that shit. I'm so sick of that. I get the cereal, okay, cool, we can go sell some cereal to some kids, cool. But the pancakes, what's that about, man? And you're going to toss me a pancake in the crowd? I don't know where your hands have been. You talk about Miz saying he could beat the New Day. Well, Paige has beat the New Day, in essence. So you don't know where their hands have been. I'm not just going to eat a random pancake from some random-ass stranger, man. That's not what this is at all.
You know, it's just, I have not seen, you know, and I just don't know if people are being PG or what. Because, you know, I don't post too much stuff like on Twitter, so I usually, you know, I don't get too grungy or anything like that, but I cannot believe that I didn't see any jokes in reference to Xavier and Paige whenever Paige sent the Miz out there. I thought at the very least I would see someone like, well, Paige wanted to go out there and beat Xavier again, but since she couldn't, she had to send the Miz out there, just, you know, something stupid like that, but I literally did not see anything about it. But yeah, the pancakes thing, I don't understand it. Like it would make more sense to me, as stupid as it sounds, if they had their own like pancake and waffle batter, you know, like Budio's batter or something, you know?
No, man, that sounds horrible.
Yeah.
You would eat Budio's batter.
No, I wouldn't eat it, but I'm just saying it would make more sense to me if it led to some sort of revenue stream, you know, like at least with the cereal, that's a real cereal. Like, they're just throwing pancakes to be throwing pancakes. Like, I agree with you. I don't know what the hell's going on there. But, yeah. Anyway, The Miz The Miz beats Big E with the skull-crushing finale. They actually went 11 minutes, and 411 Mania gave it 2.75 stars. I thought it was a lot of fun. What did you think about the match?
Yeah, I thought the entire segment was a lot of fun. I kind of group it together with the Miz TV interaction and then the actual match. I think overall it took about, what, maybe 25, 30 minutes just, you know, from start to finish. And yeah, I thought the whole situation was fun. I thought it was cool having the New Day, having both Woods and Kofi get on the mic. And yeah, just all in all, it was a fun time. I was surprised that Big E didn't go over, but it made sense the way they got out of it.
Absolutely. And they have been doing this on Raw and SmackDown, at least from what I can tell, with gimmicking up two and three different segments and kind of rolling it into one segment and taking up basically the first 30, 50, maybe even hour of the show. They did it two nights ago with Raw, where they did the Kurt Angle, Roman Reigns, into Stephanie coming out, into KO coming out, into a singles match, into a tag team match. That lasted 50 minutes. And then last night with this taking up, you I think if I remember, I when I paused it after after the Miz went over, I think you're right. It was like 32, 35 minutes, something like that. So I'm actually kind of liking what they're doing. Instead of just sending them out and having fucking Roman cutting a 15-minute promo, they, you know, it rolls into a match, which rolls into something else. And I really like the kind of change in strategy that they have with the whole first segment. I actually forgot to ask you, man. I emailed you or I messaged you and I was like, hey, so people's viewpoint on the Roman Reigns situation is kind of a cornerstone with our show. For everyone out there listening, you know, I am of the mainstream that with the viewpoint that, you know, I think Roman is getting overpushed and he's our next Cena and, you know, it's just not working. Well, Ray's got a very different opinion. And I love Ray to death. I respect his opinion. You know, I'm not speaking ill or anything like that. But you know, he thinks very highly of Roman. So if you don't mind me asking, what is your viewpoint with the whole Roman Reigns situation?
I absolutely love Roman Reigns. Listen, Roman Reigns is the most compelling character on television. Point blank. Period. End of discussion. It's not even close. Not just wrestling. Just television. Period. I mean, the what's so dope about the Roman Reigns saga is that it works on so many different levels. Just on a surface level, he consistently goes out there, he puts on great matches, his mic work has gotten exponentially better, and then you got all that other stuff that factors into the Roman Reigns character, which adds a layer of nuance to the character that you don't typically see in professional wrestling. There's just a lot going on there. As far as him, you know, I can't say that they're really pushing him down our throats because the man hasn't had the title in, what, 2 years?
Yeah, now I will say that in the last probably at least 2 months, maybe even 3 pay-per-views now, that has changed. So I should have probably put an asterisk next to that. Like, that's more, I was thinking that way about the push maybe 3 or 6 months ago. So I do apologize. But, yeah, sorry, go ahead.
So Roman Reigns, I lost my train of thought.
I'm sorry, man. That's my fault.
No, don't worry about it, man. I'll just keep talking until it makes sense. that's pretty much the story of my life. But the Roman Reigns thing, one good thing that is about him, you brought up the Cena comparison, and obviously that's a comparison to make. But one thing that you got to say about both of those guys is that whomever they're in the ring with, they make them matter that much more. I mean, Roman basically made Braun Strowman when they had their feud last year when every other week they were trying to kill each other.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, the fact that both of them aren't doing time in jail, it baffles my mind, but again, that's the WWE universe. They don't even have police officers, they have authorities, but that's neither here nor there.
And they don't go to hospitals, they go to, what do they say?
Medical facilities.
Medical facilities. But yeah, with the whole John Cena thing, you know, I for years, and still sometimes I catch myself doing this when I look back in the John Cena era, I think to myself like, man, that, you know, he's just not, you know, John Cena's not a good worker. He's not this. He's not that. But you know, when I think about it, and when most people think about it, I bet they would agree that when you put him in there with a 5-star competitor, a world-class competitor, he shows up. And I think Roman Reigns has proven, especially lately, that he does the same thing. So my viewpoint on the lackluster in-ring performance from what I thought John Cena and Roman Reigns was giving us, I try to keep away from saying that anymore, because I think both of these guys, whenever it's time to go to work, I think they both do their job very well. What was your opinion of John Cena's in-ring work whenever it was going on, let's say 5 years ago when it was, or maybe even 8 years ago when he was in his prime?
He's a little clunky and he's a little mechanical. He's not the best athlete in the ring, but his track record speaks for itself. He's put on great match after great match after great match. He's put on great matches with Jericho, Shawn Michaels, Triple H, Batista, Randy Orton, Edge, etc., etc., etc. I could go on and on and on and on. Now, obviously, you're going to make the argument that, well, look at the names that you just listed. Of course, he had great matches with them. But, I mean, it still takes two to tango and two to dance.
Yeah, so no. Yeah, absolutely.
I was, I was actually, I'm a senior truther now. At first, I felt like everybody else. I felt, oh my God, they're pushing him down our throats. He's so corny. I hate the white rapper gimmick. You could have gave that to, you, I'm R-Truth. I mean, not really, but you know what I mean. You could have gave that to somebody. Right. You could have gave that to a brother that really could have worked that and turned himself into something. But yeah, it was corny, and you know, I was tired of him and all of that. And when the switch happened for me was when he started doing the U.S. Open Challenge, and he basically went down the card and became a mid-card workhorse trying to earn our respect. And you know what I said? Goddamn it, Cena, yeah, man, I respect you. And then from that, after that seed of respect was planted, a funny thing happened. I started missing the Melon Farmer when he wasn't around. And like now when I see him, like I legitimately pop. Like, hey, man, it's good to see you. It's kind of like, you know, you're in college and you got that roommate and y'all can't stand each other because you're living together. But then when you move out from each other and then you see each other, it's all good. And you miss each other and you catch up and all of that. That's how I felt about Cena. It was that annoying friend that you didn't realize you missed until he was gone.
That's so true. Yeah, man, I completely agree. When he dropped down and just like you said, did the whole gimmick, the U.S. Title Open Challenge, that is when I changed my perspective about him as well. And one last thing about the whole John Cena thing and Roman Reigns thing where I compared them. I spent so much time disliking John Cena and sighing whenever he showed up and was like, oh, here we go, another John Cena win, another title win. And I worried about it for no reason for so long that when Roman Reigns come around and I started feeling the same way, I told myself I'm not going to put as much, I'm not going to worry about it and spend as much time talking about it and thinking about it as I did with John Cena, because I just am so, I didn't want to be negative about wrestling. Because, you know, just because I don't like one character on the show, you know, it was beginning to almost ruin wrestling for me how much I disliked John Cena for a while. And then when I stepped back, whenever the U.S. Open Challenge started happening, I realized, like, I've been hating this guy for really no reason. So, yeah, I understand what you're saying. I completely understand what you're saying, man.
Before we move on, man, I just want to say one more thing about Roman.
Yes, sir.
So, and I'm not saying this is you, brother, but I know a lot of the dweebs in the IWC, and I get on them a lot on Pod Is War because they get on my nerves. They sit in their mom's basements or their grandma's basements with Breyers ice cream hanging from their Hulk Rule shirt that they got when they were kids. So it's not even a belly shirt. Like, it comes like, it barely covers their nipples, you know what I mean? And they just type away on their keyboard talking about how much this one sucks, that one sucks, and Roman sucks. And they have the audacity to say that Roman isn't over because he's not beloved by the crowd. Let me tell you guys something. Hate is not the opposite of love. Love and hate are the exact same thing. That's why whenever people get divorced, it gets so nasty and messy. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
The opposite of love is indifference. So if every time Roman Reigns came out, the crowd was sitting on their hands and apathetic and not saying anything, well, yeah, okay, you got a point there. But no, this guy is the biggest heel, not just in the company, he's the biggest heel in wrestling right now. And his reactions are, and he even, everybody says, you know, they want him to turn. But if you read his facial expressions, he emotes so much with just a simple facial expression. You know, that's why, like you said, I don't like them giving him out, going out there and having him do 15, 20 minute promos. That's just not where his bread is buttered. But he can convey so much emotion with just a little smirk or a little facial expression or a little eye roll or whatever it is, or a flip of the hair or whatnot. Like, it's awesome. And to see everybody squirm. And you know, Chairshot Greg, our fearless leader here, the boss, he had a show last week. We're on a Outside Interference every Tuesday night live on Chairshot Radio Network. Check it out. Him and his co-host Patrick O'Dowd, they were going back and forth, and Greg came up with a theory that the reason people don't like Roman Reigns is because they're not Roman Reigns. They look at Roman Reigns and they see a man, which is something that they are not. So, you know, I'm paraphrasing. You guys should really go back and listen to the show. It's really good, entertaining podcasting. But this weekend, man, the entire internet, he broke the internet. Everybody was losing their goddamn minds. So, you know, you can't tell me that the guy's not over. And at the end of the day, you know, wrestling isn't about the matches. It's about drawing money. And they just drew $1 billion from Fox. So I think they're going to be okay.
Oh, man. You are going to have to come on the show again sometime. You've got to do some segments with my main man, Ray Cash, Like I said earlier, Ray couldn't be here today, but you and Ray would get along so well. You guys, y'all are both very intelligent. Y'all are both very well spoken, and y'all have a very similar viewpoint on Roman, and I absolutely love it. I can already tell that I'm going to love in the future, now that we know each other, I'm going to love picking your brain about different topics in the wrestling world. So I just want to say again, dude, I appreciate you coming on the show, man. Awesome, awesome.
Appreciate that, man. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, no worries. So next we had Daniel Bryan in the back. He was being interviewed about tonight's match about against Jeff Hardy. He talked about what the second chance meant to him. He said last week he showed Big Cass what he could do, and it was just a, you know, your typical backstage promo. Then we seen Aiden English come out and sing Lana to the ring. Then the Iconics arrive and mock Aiden English. They perform a duet. It was absolutely horrible. I've fallen in love with the Iconics. They are so fucking annoying that I love it. What are your thoughts on them, man?
I agree. I just question how much legs that type of gimmick has on the main roster. It seems like a gimmick that's tailor-made for NXT or something like that, or even like a Ring of Honor or something like that. But I dig it, you know, the ambiguously gay mean girl duo. Like, that's, you know, that's a cool gimmick, and they are heat magnets. I know I was sitting up here watching the show with my lady, and yeah, she was ready to turn the television off. They got on her nerves so bad.
Yeah.
Now I'm sitting up here, I'm telling her, I'm like, baby, that's the point. That means they're doing their job. But yeah, I just don't know what kind of legs they're going to have on the main roster. Plus, WWE has shown an inability to do more than one compelling woman storyline at a time. So they're getting some good heat now, but yeah, I just don't know long term. I don't know where this ends.
Yeah, I would probably agree. The fact that WWE is on TV for 3 hours a week, 52 weeks a year, and that's just, I mean, 2 hours a week for 52 weeks a year being on SmackDown, that much TV time and exposure, I'm not sure how much, or how long, rather, how much life you're going to get out of that gimmick, but I guess we'll just have to wait and see. But I do agree with you. It does seem more so like something that would be in a smaller promotion where she's not going to get as much exposure, and she could really milk that gimmick for everything that it's worth. But and I don't know as well. I don't know how long the annoyingness factor is going to go over before people stop taking them seriously, because I don't think they're the best two workers in the ring. But I guess we'll just have to wait and see. I think they're really trying to hide the fact that Billy Kay and Lana are both, I wouldn't say green, but they don't live up to normal WWE expectations when it comes to female wrestling. This match went a total of 1 minute and 11 seconds with Lana beating Billy Kay with an X Factor.
It's a barn burner, bro. I put this up there with Steamboat Flair, Savage Steamboat, you know, HBK, Bret Hart. What are you talking about? This goes into Pantheon, bro.
This is Omega Okada.
Yes.
One of my favorite workers on the roster right now, Andrade Cien Almas being backstage with Zelina Vega, cutting a promo about Andrade, you know, before he comes out. I kind of lost my train of thought there, but basically before he comes out to whoop another jobber's ass for the second week in a row. I really like, I think it was last week when he came out and he kicked that jobber's ass, and then they were like, all this buildup, all this time on NXT, and then these vignettes, and we come out here and you give me this goddamn jobber? Like, what the hell? I absolutely love that. I love this little gimmick that they got going on right now. 411 Mania has got his opponent, his name, as Jobby McJobberson. I don't know. Did you catch his real name? Because I didn't even catch his real name.
No, that works for me, actually. Yeah. I can't think anything better, so let's roll with that, man.
They went about 30 seconds longer than Billy Kay and Lana did. ended it with the Hammerlock DDT. After that, Carmella is interviewed. She's got an Asuka mask with her. She just talks about the haters. She talks about how she beat Charlotte twice, yada, yada, yada. I'm actually really kind of liking Carmella's Carmella's reign as champion right now, but I don't think it's going to last very long. Do you think she's going to be a transitional champ, or do you think she's going to pull through and hold the title for a while?
Nah, I think this is it. We're wrapping this up at Money in the Bank. Shout out to Iggy Azalea. She has been entertaining with the belt, and the way she got it was cool as well. But yeah, I think we put this back on Asuka, and then maybe we get our WrestleMania rematch at SummerSlam.
Yes.
Asuka and Charlotte.
Absolutely. You think Asuka goes over this time, then they have a rubber match at WrestleMania?
No, I think we're building towards Charlotte and Ronda for WrestleMania. But I think, you know, Asuka gets her win back right here. And then I don't really know. I guess you're just going to kind of pitter-patter around with Charlotte for a little bit. She wins the Royal Rumble, and we get Charlotte and Ronda at Mania.
Oh, yo, that is a good idea, actually. You get Charlotte win the Royal Rumble, and then she jumps over to Raw after Ronda Rousey wins the title from Nia Jax. Yeah, that's genius. I love it. I love it. Pretty much doing just like what Asuka did last year.
Precisely. Because I thought going into it when they first signed Ronda that the money match was Asuka and Ronda. Clearly, they thought otherwise. And, you know, more power to them. What can I say? They just got a Billy from Fox. So, you know, what the hell am I going to say? So, but clearly, that's where they see the money at. And so, yeah, let's just get it on. I don't know what you do. I think that they've kind of gone about this the wrong way. I would have liked to have seen, because you make money when you put two ass kickers in the ring, right? And I don't like the way Charlotte's been used lately. I think it takes away from the steam of that match, because if built properly, that match could have possibly headlined WrestleMania. Like, I feel as if Asuka and Charlotte was the best match on the card last year, and then 2 years ago, Charlotte was part of that triple threat with Sasha and Becky Lynch, and that stole the show in Dallas as well. So I think that if this was built properly, you could have ended on this match, but I think that's out the window now, because Charlotte has shown too much vulnerability in the past couple months.
Yeah, I probably would agree with that. She put over Carmella clean in a very kind of lackluster match. I mean, I say clean-ish. I mean, she got chop blocked in the knee and then pinned, right?
Yeah. That's pretty clean, you know. Especially, and it plays into Iggy Azalea's character, because she's supposed to be this tough street fighter, hood type chick. So that's something that you would do in a street fight.
Right, yeah. Touché. Good point. Next we had Shinsuke Nakamura's stipulation reveal. Nakamura beat Styles last week, which means he gets to name the stipulation for the rematch at Money in the Bank. I actually was watching this with my son, and then I had to get up and do some stuff for him, and I was running a little bit behind, so I didn't really have time to rewind it or anything. The last thing I heard was Nakamura talking about making it a pillow fight. And then it seemed like he said King of Soft Style, and then it's like he was kind of like referencing to a Last Man Standing match. But did he ever make that official?
Yeah, he did.
He did,
yeah,
make it, so it's going to be Last Man Standing?
Yeah, Raz Wan Randy or some shit like that. Yeah, he said something.
Oh my God.
He did. But yeah, they made it official.
Oh my God, dude.
I mean, he said it, not me. I'm just quoting, man.
Oh my God, I absolutely love it.
I love Hillsuke. That's what I call him now. I love this Hillsuke, because, you know, his character was already a little obnoxious, and, you know, just turn that dial just slightly and it becomes insufferable dick, and I absolutely love it. I'm just tired of seeing these two wrestle. I was sorely disappointed with their match at Mania. The matches they've had since then have gotten progressively better, but, you know, nothing that really is going to get me moist. I'm just tired of seeing these two wrestle, and I feel as if they were going to put the title on Hillsuke, they would have done it by now, so I don't think that's where we're going, which sucks, because you kind of kill the character. Like, where do you go with him? If you don't give him the belt, where does the character go?
Yeah, if he doesn't go over at some point and get a reign with that championship, I mean, what was the point of all of this? To prove that he can hang, but he's not the best in the world, or he's not one of the best in the world. I mean, he's wrestled AJ Styles like half a dozen times. You know, this is a guy that is known the world around as being, you know, the King of Strong Style, one of the hardest hitting, one of the best wrestlers. I mean, the dude was also a shoot fighter. And you don't give him a reign? You let him get all the way up there, you turn him heel. You know, a guy that was extremely over in NXT and brought some fanfare to SmackDown when he jumped to the main roster, and you turn him heel, and then you don't even give him the title, And then, so what happens after this? You're going to kick him down there and he's going to be wrestling for the U.S. title? So, yeah, I feel like he kind of killed the character.
Yeah, I agree. And I, as much as I would love to see heel skate with the title reign, at this point in time, I don't give a shit anymore. I'm just tired of seeing these two work together. I don't want to see them wrestle again. Let's just all wake up and pretend like this never happened and it was just a bad dream.
Yeah, I agree. Next we see the Balor Club. I guess we don't call them the Bullet Club anymore, but Luke Gallows and Carl Anderson facing off with the Usos. Pretty much the Good Brothers say they respect the Usos, but they blew their shot at the titles. They plan to win the titles at Money in the Bank. The Usos say this isn't Japan and this isn't Raw, so welcome to the Uso Penitentiary. I would love to see these two teams have about 15 or 20 minutes and just go to town. I absolutely love Luke Gallows and Carl Anderson. I think this is these are two other guys that, similar to Shinsuke, I think their characters have been deeply flawed ever since coming to WWE. I think they've been misused. I really hate to see these guys because these guys were so over in New Japan. What are your thoughts on Luke Gallows and Carl Anderson, and how do you feel that the WWE has used them in the last couple of years?
It really hasn't clicked, and I can't really place my finger on why. I know I used to listen to their podcast a little bit on MLW, so these guys, they're naturally funny, and they have, you know, great personalities, and then the Southpaw Regional Wrestling kind of further illustrated that as well. But I don't know. One week they were comedy, and then they were badasses. I think the best use of them at this point would be to put the club back together, some iteration, you know, either them, put them with Finn or put them with AJ and just kind of let them be his goons, for lack of a better term. I think that would be the best use of them at this point. It's cool that they're getting a push for the titles, but they're basically just getting fed to the Bludgeon Brothers. They're just going to be two big guys that the Bludgeon Brothers bludgeon, and then we keep it moving like an escalator, because we can't have the Usos in every tag team title match on every pay-per-view.
Yeah, that's a good point. So you think the old Good Brothers here are just a placeholder for the next 4 weeks, and then the Usos are going to be right back up there?
I don't know. I mean, I think the first part of that, yes, I think they're just something to do. As far as putting the Usos right back up there, I don't know, because you got the New Day lurking. It looks like they're about to do something with the Bar. You still got the Bar. That might actually be a decent match, the Bludgeon Brothers and the Bar, because they would just beat the holy hell out of each other. So they that might be kind of cool. But there's some other teams on there. I don't know if you rush the Usos back in there that quickly. I really don't know, man. I'm just going to take a wait-and-see approach.
I totally understand. So they have the match. We go to commercial break for a little bit. We come back. It wasn't a bad match while it lasted. It was I think they got 5 minutes and 25 seconds. 411, I'm just going to read what 411 Mania said about it. In regards to the match, they said, "This was okay while it lasted, but I like the Good Brothers getting the shot, as the Usos have failed so many times against the Bludgeon Brothers, and the Good Brothers will be fine challengers of the month and / sacrificial lambs." So basically what you and I were just saying, that they're kind of just placeholders until the Usos get right back up there in the main event of the tag team division. Next we had a women's Money in the Bank qualifying match with Naomi versus Sonya Deville. Mandy Rose came out with Sonya Deville. Deville looks like she tries to take things to the ground right away, as we see Becky Lynch watching on. Naomi battles back, but Deville spears her, gets a cover for the two. There was a pretty nice spine buster that just went for two. Naomi ends up beating Sonya Deville in just over 4 minutes. It was a pretty good match for the time given. 411 Mania gives it 2 stars. Who do you think is the best female wrestler on SmackDown right now? Is it Charlotte, or is it someone else?
It's got to be Charlotte. Just because she's the total package. She's got the pedigree. She's super athletic. I got to give it to Charlotte. With all due respects to Asuka, who I absolutely love. I even got a little semi-crush on, but that's neither here nor there. I think it has to be Charlotte.
Dude, number one, I agree with you. I think it's Charlotte. And it's unbelievable. Excuse me. It's unbelievable that she has not been wrestling for too many years, and she is already, you know, one of the best in the business, one of the best ever. It blows my mind. I guess it truly is genetic. When you have Ric Flair as your dad, I mean, it's in your genes already. And number two, bro, I got a little bit of a crush on Asuka too. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think I'm ready for Asuka.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. I'm ready.
Oh my god. Oh, that just popped on that hard, dude. That's hilarious.
I have a tentative yes from my better half that if I'm able to orchestrate a threesome with Asuka, it's very tentative. Which in a dude's head that means, oh hell yeah, it's a go.
Maybe is always yes, bro. Maybe
and it's not even tentative. Yes. The more I think about it, it's not even tentative. I think she just commented that she thought she was cute. So in my head, you know, I took it from zero to a million. So stay tuned.
Oh my god, that is freaking hilarious, man. That is hilarious. So next we had this was the main event, right? We're already up at the main event. Daniel Bryan versus Jeff Hardy.
Yeah, Jeff was on that narcotic, man. I just wanted to throw that out there. I love Jeff Hardy. Super cool dude. Got a chance to meet him and chop it up with him. Super cool dude. So, you know, it's nothing personal. But when he came out that locker room and cut that promo, yeah, Jeff was on that narcotic.
Really? So you think so? You think he was on something, huh?
He was on something, yes, sir.
Man, you know, I've talked about this on the show multiple times. Not too many times, but, you know, a few times. But I've always had a soft spot in my heart for Jeff Hardy. Because of his struggles with alcohol and pain pill addiction, and I think I also read that what happened like at Victory Road 2011 was somas, which were muscle relaxers and stuff.
Yeah.
But you know, I've struggled with addiction for the last several years of my life. I'm actually clean and sober now. Actually, clean and sober going on 6 months now. I was five months last week. So.
Congratulations.
Thank you sir, I appreciate it. But so anyway, I've always had a soft spot in my heart for Jeff Hardy, because I know the struggle that he's going through. I actually I work with Chavo Guerrero. He works for the World Class Revolution, the promotion that I work for. Great promotion. Chavo is has got a very prominent role in the backstage area, and he actually has come on the show in the past, and I got to tell him how much I respected Eddie for battling with pain pill addiction, actually getting clean, coming back, and winning the world title. So that was one of the highlights of my career, is getting to tell Chavo that. Anyway, I kind of got off topic there, but I just, you know, I'm very, very passionate about this topic. But yeah.
Thanks for making me feel like a dick too, man. I was just trying to give a throwaway joke. Now I feel like the biggest asshole in the world.
No.
PSA, you know what I mean?
No. That's not. I swear to God, that's not what I meant at all. Because I was about to say, what I was getting at is you got to feel bad for Jeff Hardy if he's struggling again, but you can't let something like that happen. If he is on something, the WWE has to do something, because you know it's not just hurting Jeff Hardy if he is coming out and he looks like he's under the influence of something. What if he fucks something up and Daniel Bryan is hurt because of it? Do you know what, you see what I'm saying? That's where I was going with it. I wasn't trying to make it sound like I was doing like a PSA or anything like that. I was getting at to the deal where I feel bad for Jeff Hardy, but you got to think about Daniel Bryan, because you know Daniel Bryan's life is in Jeff Hardy's hands in this ring for the next 12 minutes. Does that make sense?
Yeah, you still killed the joke, though. I was just trying to... Because you're absolutely right. Like, everything that you have said since I made that little joke, you're absolutely correct. You are absolutely right. I can't argue with any of it. You are correct, sir.
I'm sorry, man. I didn't mean that.
I still feel like a dick.
No, don't, man. Don't. I'm sorry, man. I didn't mean for it to happen like that. I was just trying to preface that with, man, if Jeff's struggling again, you're gonna have to, because you know you're gonna have to do something. Is all I was going with. I didn't mean to make you feel bad. I promise, myself or no one else took that joke the wrong way. It was a funny joke, because that's why I was laughing about it, man.
And maybe he was sober. Maybe he was just playing into that whole charismatic enigma thing. You know what I mean? Maybe that's what it was, and I misread it. But, yeah, it just – anywho, Daniel Bryan and Jeff Hardy, huh? They had a match.
No, I actually, when I seen Jeff Hardy do that, I actually thought that myself, but I didn't know if I was the only one thinking that. I didn't know if I was being like overly sensitive to the situation, like, God damn, is this guy fucked up again? So that's why I didn't say anything. But once you said something, I was like, oh shit, I'm not the only one. So that's why I brought it up for. But 411 Mania gave it 3.25 stars. They say it was a good main event for TV. They didn't get a ton of time. It was enjoyable. I'd like to see a 20-minute match between them. I'd like to see... I'd love to see them on pay-per-view for the U.S. title going 20 minutes.
Yeah, I agree, because I think there's another gear that they could kick it into, and they couldn't, A, because of time constraints. And the commercial break kind of messed this one up, too, because it... as a fan watching at home, you never really got into the rhythm of the match because of the commercial breaks.
Yeah, I totally agree. I love Samoa Joe coming out. I love him saying, Daniel Bryan, you better not be celebrating because you and I face off in the main event next week. I absolutely love that. I absolutely love that. I think Daniel Bryan versus Samoa Joe is going to be a phenomenal match. And that's it for SmackDown. I wanted to ask you a couple of questions. So you alluded to it earlier. So you know about the 5-year, $1 billion contract that SmackDown or WWE has got with Fox and SmackDown. So what do you think about that? Do you think they're worth $1 billion for 5 years?
Well, okay, it's lesson time, kids. Listen to your Uncle Chris here, okay? Life lessons. This is a jewel right here. In life, you won't ever get what you're worth. You won't ever make what you're worth. You only make what you have the leverage to negotiate. Point blank, period.
That's a phenomenal way to put it, man. That really is.
And I mean, you know, for the past 15 years, 15, 16 years, ever since, the, you know, WrestleMania 17 and the end of the Attitude Era and the Monday Night Wars, you know, everybody's been talking about the declining ratings. And obviously, that's true. They've chased off a lot of the casual fans. But at the end of the day, SmackDown still draws 2.5 million viewers every week on the USA Network. So to kind of put that in perspective for you guys, think about shows like Mad Men and The Wire and Breaking Bad. You know, these are three shows that are widely considered in the pantheon of television, right?
Right.
They didn't even consistently get those numbers. I mean, Breaking Bad's numbers kind of went through the roof the final season because everybody got to, you know, DVR, everybody got to binge watch that shit. So by the time it came back, everybody was ready for it. But they didn't even consistently get 2.5 million viewers. So, it, you know, it's a good... I mean, what can you say, man? These guys just made $1 billion.
Yeah, man. I agree. I you will never catch me wanting to count another man's money, if that makes sense. If someone's going to offer you money, you ain't going to get no criticism from me if you take it, because any money that you turn down is money that you'll never ever be able to make up, no matter what, if that makes sense. If you're turning down money, you're not going to be able to make that back up. You might be able to get more money from someone else down the road, but you'll never have that money from that person. So,
I feel what you're saying. So what's interesting, though, is, you know, Fox, because I'm assuming, I don't know all the particulars, so maybe you can help fill me in. I'm assuming that it's going to be on Fox, right? Not like FS1 or any affiliate. It's going to be Fox, right?
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. It's on Fox broadcast, and they said either it's going to go from 8 to 10 or it's going to stay at the 7 to 9 time slot. But they are going to move to Friday nights is what's been said thus far, anyway.
So how is that going to work? Is it still going to be live? Because I got to imagine, you know, logistically, not so much for the workers, but for the crew and stuff like that and the camera people, that's got to be a nightmare if they're going to try to record or if they're going to do a live show Friday night.
From everything that I've read, the thought process is that they're still planning on staying live. But I also want to preface that with saying... Or I want to follow that up by saying that is not from WWE or Fox. That is from, you know, third parties that, you know, in air quotes, are close to the situation. So I guess we probably truly don't know if it's going to be live or not. But I would assume, man, I mean, if I pay $1 billion for 5 years for a product, I would assume that they would stay live. Wouldn't you think?
You would think so, because that's kind of what this is. Like, you know, right. these networks are thirsty for content right now. That's the big thing. Content, content, content. So, yeah, I'm with you. I think that was part of the deal, but that just sounds horrible for the men and women that have to, you know, set up the ring and do the cameras and the production staff. That sounds horrible. Like, you know, Monday and Tuesday, that's cool. You bang everything out right there. Okay, so we're done Tuesday. We get to go home Wednesday. We hit the road again on Friday. We get to, you know, parent our kids for about 5 minutes, make love to our significant others, and then we hit the road Friday, and then we're doing house shows all weekend. That just sounds horrible. But again, it's hard to turn down $1 billion, so I'm sure they'll figure something out.
Yeah, man, $1 billion. I'm anxious to see how much they're gonna get, how much USA and NBCU is gonna pay for Raw. Now that there's been a huge increase in SmackDown, you got to believe that USA is gonna have to come off some money to keep Raw on there for long term.
The game has changed. The game has definitely changed. So, yeah, we're going to see, you know, how willing USA is going to be to break bread, because I think Raw is still their highest rated program on their channel, I believe.
Yeah, I think you are absolutely right, because Raw is getting a little bit better ratings than SmackDown currently. I think they're getting, I want to say 3. I think they're averaging a hard 3, maybe even close to 3.25. 3 million viewers every Monday. So more power to them, man. To me, I was telling Ray this yesterday when we spoke about it briefly at the beginning of our show yesterday. I think this right here, to me, feels like it is good for the entire wrestling industry, not just WWE. Because us at World Class Revolution, we just signed our first TV deal. We're in a couple of markets in Missouri right now. If you show the United States, hey, Fox is paying $1 billion for half of the weekly cable content that WWE puts out, it's going to show TV stations and corporations like, hey, this is, you know, wrestling's obviously in the mainstream. It's a big deal. So that could potentially add markets for us down in the indie ranks. It could add advertising in those shows. It could add live event advertising. It could have more cities calling us trying to get live events in their locations. Like, I feel like this could potentially be an injection of even more money into the indie scene. Does that make sense to you? Would you agree with that, or do you think that I'm just if I'm being biased about the situation because I work for an indie promotion?
Not at all. I mean, a rising tide raises all ships. And one of the interesting aspects about this is WWE getting back on mainstream terrestrial television. So, you know, because not everybody has cable, and a lot of people more and more are cutting the cords anyway. And their main, or not their main demographic, but the average WWE viewer is, I think, you know, some in 50. I don't think it's exactly 50, but they're in their 50s. And a lot of those people, they're pretty loyal to their network television. So I'm curious to see how this is going to increase viewership and get eyeballs on the product. Because I agree with you on that aspect. I think this is an opportunity to get casual fans back into wrestling too, because they just paid $1 billion for this Melon Farmer. So you know they're going to promote the hell out of it. Like, you're going to mess around. You're going to see New Day on Gotham. You know what I mean? Lana's going to be the weather girl on your local Fox affiliate. You know, they're going to have a Rusev Day show.
Oh, my God. I didn't even think about none of that.
Yeah, there's going to be all type of crossover. John Cena's going to be in the booth for the NFL games, you know, talking to Tony Romo and Dick Butkus, whoever the lead announcer is. You're going to see WWE all over Fox, man. So that's going to be interesting. And they're going to catch, I think they're going to catch a lot of the casual fans. And I've been saying it for the past few years. I felt like wrestling was on the precipice of a boom period anyway. So this might be the thing that takes it over the top.
Oh my God, that is so awesome. That just made me laugh, and I'm looking forward to it, man. I truly am. But that's all I got for today, my man. So don't forget to check out our boy, Mr. Christopher Platt, on Thursdays, which is Pot of War, and then on Fridays on Chair Shot Radio. Follow him on Twitter at The Real C Platt. Christopher, what else can I give a shout out for, man? What do you want to holler at before we get off the air?
Well, it's Pod is War, so like Raw.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Nah, I'm just busting your chops, man. I'm just busting your balls here. Yeah, you heard the guy though, man. Check me out Thursdays on Pot is War. Check me out Fridays, Chair Shot Radio, all on Chair Shot Radio Network. And again, man, go to thechairshot.com. We really are the premier site for all things wrestling in the industry right now. Seriously, you want to know what's going on? You want to read some interesting content? You want to hear some great shows like this one and many more? You got to get down with the Chair Shot and support the movement, ladies and gentlemen. Pretty pleased with the sugar on top, all right? Go to ProWrestlingTees.com/TheChairShot. Pick up your official Like a Referee's Whistle Chair Shot merchandise. Give, brothers and sisters. Open your hearts, brothers and sisters, and you give. You join the movement. You become the cool kids. You like the content. You want to keep it on the air. You like the podcast. The articles. You like the news we bring you. You like the tweets. All the tweets. And we on the Instagram. Just give. Open your hearts and give. It's $20, man. What's $20? Seriously, in the big scheme of things, man. If you can't part with $20, man, if $20 is really going to make or break you, you've got some, you need to go back and sit down in a dark room and reevaluate some things, man, because, no, come on, man. You enjoy our content. You enjoy what you give us, man. It's a give and take, man. We love bringing it to you. We want to keep bringing it to you. Support the movement, man. ProWrestlingTees.com/TheChairShot. Pick up your merch, man. Please and thank you.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God, I'm crying over here. Mr. Velvet Pipes, my main man, thank you so much for coming on the show. You've been an absolute hoot, my friend. I'm gonna steal the melon farmer gimmick for sure.
Please do. I'm trying to get that over. Please do.
That was absolutely awesome, man. But for real, on the real, I sure appreciate you coming on the show. Thank you for filling in for Ray. We could not have found a better co-host for the day, and we just appreciate it so very much, man. Everyone out there listening, don't forget, follow this guy on everything that he's doing right now. Pod is War, Chair Shot Radio on Twitter. Follow us on thechairshot.com. That's at thechairshot.com, where you can also follow us at Chairshot Radio. You can follow our show on at World Class Daily, and you can follow me at Fox the Podcaster. So everyone out there, stay strong and too sweet.
Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling. Tossed salads and scrambled eggs. Mercy. And maybe I seem a bit confused. Yeah, maybe, but I got you pegged. But I don't know what to do with those tossed salads and scrambled eggs. They're calling again. Scrambled eggs all over my face. What is a boy to do?